Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Viewing Angles podcast, the only podcast on the face of the earth. It's me, Nuts. It's me, Dan, your A-host. And with me, as always, is the B-host.
Yeah, it's me, Robert Mecki. It's time for y'all to wake the fuck up and realize that Viewing Angles is the only movie podcast.
Wake up, sheeple.
Got him.
Got him good. The people have a right to know, and they will be forced to know things by us. We'll just put our knowledge right on top of them. It'll crush them underneath the weight of the knowledge.
A hell of a pitch. You should write more copy for the podcast.
Yeah, this is all pre-written. I worked up all night to get all this down right. So please, just a little appreciation would be perfectly appreciated.
Dan, what's the news of the week?
The news of the week. Well, first, it's us. It's us. Us is the news. Us is the news. Us broke some records. I don't know. Probably not. Broke records for biggest opening weekends for Jordan Peele.
It definitely broke records. I think I was reading, too, that it is Us was the largest opening, or the second largest opening of all time for an original live action film. I think the first place is Avatar, which is crazy that this movie
really
is second only to Avatar as the largest opening of all time for the for a live action film, an original live action film, I should say.
Is that true? Could that possibly be true?
I think so. I mean, like, there are a lot of stipulations here, but like, it's original live action. So no franchises, no sequels, but no, like, animated Titanic? Films. I think this opened bigger than Titanic. Like, I think Titanic made all of its money with its legs.
And the DVDs, the two VHS sales.
Yeah, exactly. Although I also don't know if this news is probably not inflation adjusted.
Definitely not. Yeah.
So, but I mean, this is still like $70 million for an R-rated original property live action horror film.
Yeah,
that's pretty fucking impressive.
The horror film part of it is insane. Like, the theater was packed for an R-rated horror movie, and it was definitely filled with people who are not used to horror movies. Heard a lot of hooping and hollering, a lot of screaming, but it was fun. I had a good time at the movie theater, but we'll get into that later. So, big news on the box office: $71.1 million opening. Yowza, that's pretty good. Captain Marvel slide in a second with $34 million. And then Wonder Park, whatever that is, again, yeah, at $8 million.
That's still making money somehow.
Somehow.
To think that this movie's making millions of dollars, that's wild. This movie that doesn't even have a director, at least not a credited director.
Right, but it's got an all-star cast, apparently.
I mean, the only name I really recognized was John Oliver when you read the cast list last episode.
Yeah, there are other people in it, I bet.
I believe you that there are other people in it.
But that would be funny if it was just John Oliver, like, doing all the voices.
Yeah, if you pulled a fucking Nutty Professor.
Yeah, that's what we need, more of those types of movies where one guy plays a whole bunch of guys.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of got it with Us. Not that, like, it was one person playing everybody, but, like, it was one set of actors playing two sets of characters.
Right, true. But we'll get into that more. I guess we'll go right into the news, though, because this was a big week for trailers.
Yeah, a lot of hype. Yeah,
a lot of hype around these trailers. I'll go ahead and make a hot take that the most hyped trailer is the new Tarantino movie, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, starring Margot Robbie, Leo DiCaprio, and Brad Pitt, and a whole bunch of other people. Literally every person, like, in Hollywood is in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about the experience of that trailer, Rob?
I'm pretty into it. But here's the thing. I know a lot of people are probably going to disagree with me here. I think that Leonardo DiCaprio and Brad Pitt's characters are gay. And I think it was hinted at in the trailer, but I don't think that it's, you know, going to be a big part of the marketing. I think it's just going to be something that you learn as you watch the film.
So what do you what's your theory behind this? Like, why do you think I'm not disagreeing with you. I just want to know where you're pulling this out of.
Yeah, I think the interview at the very beginning of the trailer is like, I'm just going to say my Gator was going off.
Sure. Yeah.
And you also have the line. My favorite line is when Brad Pitt is like, yeah, I carry his load.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, you do. Yeah, you do. Fucking slut.
That would be an interesting twist to a Tarantino movie. Because I don't know, has there been any like high profile gay relationships in a Tarantino movie?
Nope.
As far as we know.
Yeah, it's about damn time that this happened.
Yeah, so that's an interesting take. I'm excited for that, but also outside of that, it looks like I had no idea what to expect, and it is delivering things that I was not expecting, which is good. That's like what I want from a Tarantino movie. Show me things that I've never seen before.
I think the best part of that trailer was when the little girl tells DiCaprio, like, that's the best acting I've ever seen. And he just starts, he starts like tearing up.
Rick fucking Dalton. Great. I liked the guy who's doing Bruce Lee.
Oh, he's Bruce Lee. Bruce Lee. He's Bruce Lee reincarnated.
Yeah, that's a very, very good impression of Bruce Lee.
Yeah. Although I do love how butthurt a lot of Bruce Lee fans are getting at this trailer. They're like, oh my god, Bruce Lee should have just kicked the shit out of Brad Pitt's character.
Like, they're not fighting for real, idiots. Like,
yeah, it's a movie fight. Although I also got that line where he's like, if I fight you and I accidentally kill you, I would go to jail. And like, Brad Pitt is just like, if anybody was fighting and somebody killed another person, they would go to jail. That's how manslaughter works.
Yeah. That's I love the doofy Brad Pitt. That's a favorite of mine. Yeah. I love his little doofus character work.
Oh yeah. Burn After Reading, fucking gold.
True Romance, great.
God, but yeah, I'm so hyped for this movie. We didn't get a whole lot of Margot Robbie. I'm curious to see how integral the Manson murders actually are to the plot of this film.
Yeah, because we saw Charlie Manson, we saw Sharon Tate, no Steve McQueen yet, but Bruce Lee is in it, and he was, I think Polanski thought that Bruce Lee did the murders originally.
What?
Yeah, because really? Bruce Lee had like lost a glove, and they found a glove at like the scene of the crime.
Oh, fuck.
So that was a big part of it. But, I think the big question for me is, will this be revisionist history a la Inglourious Basterds?
Yes.
Or will this be like a straight up, like, is Rick Dalton going to murder Charlie Manson before this can go down?
Yes. This is, I would feel pretty safe in saying that this is revisionist history. I do not think that Tarantino has much of an interest in portraying accurately the Manson murders and the fallout that it had in Hollywood.
That would be a weird third act for this movie, I feel like.
I mean, dude, they killed Hitler. They killed Hitler on Inglourious Basterds.
Right. Has there ever been a movie dramatizing the events of the Helter Skelter murders?
I don't know, actually. I feel like, I mean, there probably is. It just probably wasn't that big. I'm sure there's at least a TV movie about it.
Yeah, I mean, I know there's been stuff about, like, Charlie Manson, but I don't think specifically
Tate murders. There's a ton of true crime, but yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if there was, though, and it wasn't that big because, you know, not many people in Hollywood have a name as big as Tarantino's.
Right. And I mean, nobody, I don't know, it's hard to sell people on a movie where a pregnant lady gets her baby cut out of her. Like, that's it's a non-starter, I feel like.
Yeah. I don't know. People listen to true crime shit all the time now. Like, if you're willing to listen to a fucking podcast about it for like 8 hours straight, I feel like you could probably sell that movie.
Yeah, you would think.
I mean, we're getting a Zac Efron movie about a guy who skull fucked his victims, so.
Right, allegedly.
Yeah.
All right. Well, the other trailer coming out this week, very hyped as well, is John Wick: Parabellum. aka John Wick 3. Wake up, sheeple. It's here. And I don't really know what to say about this besides, yeah, hell yeah, let's keep it going. Everyone knows what to expect at this point. Love the Matrix reference.
Yeah.
Like, what was the Matrix reference? Guns. Lots of guns.
Oh, like, man, I didn't even catch that when I saw the trailer. I'm just like, yeah, of course he would need lots of guns.
Right. That's been like Keanu's modus operandi for quite a while now.
Yeah. There's not a whole lot to talk about with this trailer. It looks dope as fuck. I think anybody that's seen John Wick 1 or 2 knows how good this team is.
Yeah. Bold of them to introduce more dog characters. Now that Halle Berry's got two dogs.
Yeah, but these dogs are like badass. Like, John Wick's dog didn't kill anybody. These dogs are going to rip some throats out.
Right, yeah. Ooh. Dog deaths are scary deaths.
Oh, they're vicious.
Do you think you could fight off a dog?
Depends on the breed.
Like a German Shepherd, like...
Yeah, but I'd probably, like, lose an arm in the process.
Right, yeah. I mean, obviously, it's not going to be good for you, but, like, will it be worse for the dog? I like to think that, like, how... Like, dogs are scary.
Yeah, well, I think it also depends. Like, there are a lot of variables in the scenario, right? So, like, where am I fighting it? Like, am I fighting it in the desert? Ocean. Or, like...
Yeah. Yeah, you're fighting in the middle of the ocean on a platform.
We would both drown. Yeah. it depends. Like, I think, you know, opposable thumbs are a pretty OP thing that God gave us over dogs. So if we can use that, if I could use my thumbs to get weapons, I think I would stand a chance. If it's like me naked in the desert fighting a dog, probably not.
Right, because he's going right for your belly.
Yeah, he's going right for my dick. Yeah.
That's dogs know where you're vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
They can smell that. Other than that, I don't know. We got Halle Berry in what feels like her first role since Cloud Atlas. Or no, she had that crazy, like, her daughter was kidnapped. You remember this movie? What was it called?
She had to,
like, follow the kidnappers instead of like calling the police.
Yeah, no. So that movie was called The Call. Fun fact, it was produced by WWE Productions for some reason.
What?
And yeah, it's about Halle Berry played a 911 operator who like gets a call from this girl who gets kidnapped. And I guess I don't exactly remember why she can't just forward it to the police. But
no,
like,
thinking of a different movie where she's also on the phone.
That sounds pretty similar to the movie.
Her daughter gets, like, kidnapped.
That sounds pretty similar to the movie that I'm describing.
I bet that Halle Berry has been in a lot of similar movies.
Yeah. I miss her in Catwoman. I want to watch Catwoman again.
Kidnap. That's what it was called.
It's just called Kidnap?
Just called Kidnap.
Ooh. Nice. Good. Yeah, I'm glad she's hopefully this is like the beginning of a renaissance, though.
Right. Oscar winner Halle Berry, unfortunately, has not really been in too many good movies.
Yeah. The only Oscar winner to win a Razzie in the same year, I believe.
For Catwoman?
Yeah. For Monsters Ball and Catwoman.
That's pretty baller.
That's an accomplishment. Also, she showed up to accept a Razzie. Like, I love Halle Berry, man. She has such a good sense of humor and such a good sense of self-awareness of her place in Hollywood.
Oh, and yeah. Like, I'm sure she wishes she did more stuff, but
yeah. She knows she wasn't Swordfish.
Right. Swordfish is probably wins the award for like worst movie to be on TV all the time.
Yeah. A TBS would not exist without Swordfish existing.
Jeez, yeah. That's like when you're a kid and you think like, oh, this movie's on TV a lot. It must be good.
Right.
And you keep watching it like, well, where's the good parts? Like the montages of Hugh Jackman like hacking into random stuff. Visualized by like squares moving and like turning 3D.
Dude, hacking is all geometry. That's what they don't tell you in school.
Hack the planet, man.
Yeah. Back to John Wick. Yeah. Looks pretty good. I'm also glad that the guy from Top Chef, Iron Chef, has a role as an assassin in this movie. I'm so hyped for that.
I have no idea who that could be.
The Asian guy, like the only Asian David guy Yang? In the trailer. Is that actually his name? David Yang?
I don't know. I don't know if he's an Iron Chef guy. I know he's like a he's got shows and stuff.
Did you just make up an Asian name?
No. Did you?
I don't
David
know.
Chang is a David, real guy.
No, fuck. David Chang is a chef. Are you talking about the guy who's famous for ramen?
Sure. I don't know what he's famous for. I just know that he's a chef.
He's friends with Aziz Ansari. Yeah, that's David Chang. He has some really good Netflix specials. He's also a very successful chef. But that is not who I'm talking about. Although David Chang in John Wick 3 would be fucking amazing.
Hey, there's still time. They could put him into post.
Yeah, just a couple reshoots before May, I think, is when this movie's coming out.
Hey, it could happen.
Dude, I just can't wait for the fucking motorcycle katana fight.
Yeah, they're really just like up this. Do you think this is going to be like the new Fast and Furious / like Mission Impossible, but for like R-rated, like gung fu?
God, just like, damn it.
Keep
do
doing
I hope
more
so.
And more. Yeah.
Do I fucking even if John Wick dies in this one, I hope that it just spawns a universe of other assassins we can follow. Like, fuck, give me a trilogy of Halle Berry's character after this one. I would watch that. Like an assassin who mainly uses dogs to kill people. Fuck yeah.
Yeah, I don't, that's there's a lot of room here, and I know that the director has said, like, hey, as long as people keep showing up, we'll keep making these movies. Like, yeah. Keanu and I could, like, do a lot.
Yeah, they're just going to let Keanu film Bill and Ted, and then he's going to go back to making John Wick 4.
Yeah, I mean, these movies, like, how expensive could they be to make? And they definitely do well, but I felt like the first one didn't start doing well. Like,
the first one, I think, like, even I thought that the first one was just another, like, weird cheap cash grab of an action film, and then I saw it and I was like, oh fuck, this is something special, this is good.
Yeah, so they're they're steadily, the second one made like twice as much basically. Yeah. On the same budget.
I think word of mouth is really helping out these films, and like I think it is the thing. It's from an optics perspective, everybody just sees the trailers and is like, oh, it's Keanu Reeves being Keanu Reeves, just a little bit older. But these movies are so much more
just
than
a little
that.
Bit older.
Yeah.
I love it. I am very excited. When did this movie come out? May 17th, right?
Yeah.
I am ready. All right. Let's get into the lows of the low of the week, which is mainly that the Disney and Fox merger is done. And apparently everybody in Disney is getting fired. Like
everybody in Disney or everybody in Fox?
Everybody at Disney, everybody at Fox already knew, like, if they're getting fired or not. But apparently the day that the merger went through, they started, like, letting every department know, like, department by department, who was getting fired.
And cut costs somewhere, because $70 billion is not a small amount of money.
Yeah, no, I just, it's still just don't really know, like, why, I guess. Like, I'm still confused on the why of this.
They're trying to future-proof the studio.
Yeah, know? I guess. But how is it not already future-proof?
I mean, I don't know. That's why we're not the CEOs of Disney.
Right, yeah. I guess people are paid to think about that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I don't know. Capitalist Darwinism in action.
Yeah, eat or be eaten. There's always a bigger fish.
Maybe if Fox had made better movies, this wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's... if they had just made better stuff. So that means Fox, the TV channel, and ABC, like, they have two out of the big five TV channels.
Yeah, although they apparently had, they had to spin off all of the news networks and sports networks that Fox owned into their own entities because of the antitrust laws.
All like the local ones, right?
Yeah, local ones and Fox News. Obviously,
right, yeah,
Disney,
Fox
like,
News.
Although
well, the Murdochs
Disney,
will still control that forever.
Yeah, if Disney owned, oh my God, if Disney had bought Fox News, though, could you imagine? Like, I would love just to see Bob Iger go ham on all the Fox News hosts who are always like, oh, Disney's fucking destroying masculinity. Like,
yeah, like, I wonder, it has to be that Murdoch did not want to sell Fox News, because if he did, then it's just like, why would a, like, George Soros just not like buy it and then fire
right?
everybody.
Yeah.
Like, where's the conspiracy there? Like,
I wish that would happen though. Fuck, Fuck antitrust laws. I just want to see Democrats. I want to see the liberals own every news network in America.
Yeah, well, Rupert Murdoch will die one day. And,
yeah, but he has offspring.
Right, but I think his offspring are like chiller.
I hope so. I don't trust any spawn of that creature, you know?
Yeah, those Australians. Disgusting. Close the borders to Australians.
Man.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I don't really have anything else on that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I feel bad that everybody's losing their jobs, and it sucks to, like, because I'm sure everybody that was working at Well, I don't know about everybody. I'm sure at least 10 or 20% of the people that are getting fired probably hated their jobs anyway. But I imagine for a lot of people, like, working at Disney was probably their dream position. So this is a bummer.
Out of, like, the 4,000 people they fired, I assume, like, at least half of them loved working at Disney.
At least, I mean, I don't know. Like, I hear so many horror stories of people that work at these big corporations that everybody initially wants to work at, who turn around and eventually say, like, yeah, man, this job fucking sucks. Like,
yeah, I like to assume that everybody hates their job. I think that, like, is a better way to live your life, but also
everybody actually does hate their job, yeah.
Right, deep, like, down, we only do our jobs so that we get paid to do cool stuff, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's a general consensus with, like, everybody who's not, like, a priest or whatever.
Everybody, no, even priests only do it to diddle kids, but everybody who...
Right, but you can do that without being a priest. Being a priest is so much hard.
I'm just saying, being a priest is, like, it's easy cover for it, though, because, like, the entire diocese will stand up for you.
Yeah, I mean, true. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
A Catholic priest, you want to be, like, a Lutheran priest? They will kick you out.
Oh, yeah, that's fucking hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're like a Southern Baptist priest, yeah, man, respect. But I was gonna say, like, the only people that probably really love their jobs are, like, fucking influencers or, like, Twitch streamers, like, that literally get paid just to live their life and show it off.
Right, yeah, like basketball players, stuff like people who are like, I love this game. Like, sure, yeah, all right.
Yeah.
And us.
Yes, we get paid so much money for doing this podcast.
Right, we get paid by Warner Brothers to just shit on Disney all day long.
Yeah, next episode we defend the crimes of Grindelwald.
Yeah, if the check clears, that's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
All right, and then the toss up is new casting for the Scooby-Doo movie, which has destroyed Matthew Lillard's ability to be happy.
Yeah.
By recasting Shaggy for some reason.
Did they say, oh, it's Will Forte playing Shaggy, right?
Yeah. Which, yeah. Sure, I mean, yeah, I believe that. But Matthew Lillard, like, was amazing.
He embodied that character. Like, he is Shaggy. I love Will Forte, yeah. But he's not Shaggy. Hashtag not my Shaggy.
Right. As much as Matthew Lillard is not MacGruber, Will Forte is not Shaggy.
Yeah. Man, when I saw this news, though, so the news that we're talking about, the big stuff, is that Zac Efron is playing Fred and Amanda Seyfried is playing Daphne in the Scooby-Doo reboot. And when I first saw this Twitter headline, I thought it was a joke.
Yeah, no, definitely. Because I'm like, how old are these people? Like, how, what is our...
Zac Efron is going to be playing teenagers forever.
Right, just because he looks so good. But I mean, he's got to be like... is mid to late 30s now, right?
Yeah, he's like Dave Franco. Like, he's at least like mid 30s.
No, he's 31. Wow, he just yeah,
he's early 30s still.
Yeah, he just
30s.
Started super early.
Yeah,
but I just don't know. That's I mean, he's funny, sure.
Yeah,
I just have no idea what kind of tone this, like, this reboot is going for.
Who's directing it, do we know?
James Gunn.
Oh, I fucking wish. That's what I was actually going to say, is I'm really only fine with this news if they use James Gunn's original R-rated Scooby-Doo script.
Yeah.
I think that would be amazing. And I mean, hey, R-rated movies make money again, you know? Look at how much money Us made.
Right, yeah. Hey, that's a... But I doubt that a Scooby-Doo movie will... make as much as Us. Well, who knows?
I don't know. I mean, it depends on the rating.
Yeah, I would watch a hard R Scooby-Doo movie.
Hell yeah, I would watch a hard R Scooby-Doo movie, especially if it was written by James Gunn. I'm also a big fan of, like, I love the dark interpretations of Scooby-Doo. I think that shit's hilarious. And, like, there's a comic line being published by one of DC's imprints right now called Scooby-Doo Apocalypse, which is basically an R-rated Scooby-Doo that's all about Mystery Inc. dealing with, like, apocalyptic supernatural events. And it's hilarious. But just out of curiosity,
that sounds very wild.
It is wild, and you should look up some copies online just to see what it's like, because it's is it a good time? But right now I'm looking up how much Scooby-Doo the original live action made, because I'm just curious to see how much money this
I want to know so bad.
All right, worldwide it made $275 million on a production budget. Oh my God. The original Scooby-Doo live action movie cost $84 million.
That's all on Scooby-Doo. Like, yeah, right. It has to be.
Yeah. They paid Matthew Lillard like $100 to play Shaggy. They gave him like $100 and a shit ton of weed.
Right. Yeah. He was living out of his car, and they're like, we'll put you up on our couch, man. And he's like, yeah, zoinks, man.
Zoinks. Scooby-Doo 2 only made $181 million worldwide, though.
Scooby-Doo 2 sucks, I'll say.
Yeah. I mean, as soon as they introduced Scrappy-Doo, like, who the fuck cares about Scrappy-Doo?
Right. They should have known right away, like, oh, the most hated character in animation history next to Scrooge McDuck. No.
Yeah.
Disgusting. All right. Enough about the bits. Let's get into the feature of the week.
Yeah, let's get into the meat of the episode.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. What'd you say?
I said, let's get into the meat of the episode.
Very meaty, I'll tell you what. All right. The movie is Us, written, directed, and co-produced by Jordan Peele of Key and Peele fame, starring Lupita Nyong'o, Winston Duke, and then two other smaller people, plus Elizabeth Moss and Tim Heidecker of Tim and Eric fame.
Tim Heidecker is the best part of this movie.
Yeah, so it follows a family going to a beach house when they are confronted by a group of doppelgangers. Ones that look just like them. And the terror is real.
That's a succinct explanation.
Yeah, right? Is that good? Did I miss anything? I feel like it's a pretty simple concept for a movie.
Yeah, it is a simple concept, but I think once you go into this movie, there's a lot more. There's a lot more to talk about, but I don't think we'll talk about it here because, you know, we care about spoilers. We respect your decision as an audience to go see this movie.
Yeah, so let's kind of get into the minutiae of the movie. First, like, the best part by far, I think, is the acting. The acting is so good.
The acting is great all across the board. Shout out to Lupita Nyong'o, because goddamn, I'm hoping that she is as good as Toni Collette was in Hereditary.
Right.
But hopefully, because hashtag Oscar's so white, I think that Lupita Nyong'o actually has a chance at being nominated next year. Like, if they nominated Black Panther for anything at the Oscars this year, they should nominate Lupita Nyong'o for her performance in Us, because goddamn, this movie is her performance is so good. It's so affecting. And she plays two completely different characters so well.
Right, and one, like, terrifying character, really.
Oof.
One that just, like, really, like, and not even, like, two different characters. She's got a voice, like, she's got the whole thing going on.
It's, it doesn't even feel like the same actress, even though, like, you know, they don't look exactly the same, but they're clearly the same person.
They look very different.
Yeah, but goddamn, I cannot believe that it's the same actor portraying these two different characters, usually, like, within the same scene, too.
Yeah, they're like acting off of each other, which is just great. Like, it must have been very hard for Jordan Peele to do that. Like, it's good to see that he can really perform with, because this is like five times the budget of Get Out, which, granted, only had like a budget of what, $4.5 million?
Was Get Out's budget really that low?
Yeah, super low. I mean, what could have been?
I mean, like, I guess. The house is probably the most expensive part to rent.
Right, yeah. I mean, they rented. Probably it had like a super short shoot schedule. Like, it was only like a month, I think, less.
Yeah.
So, and like, who were the big stars? Like Daniel Kaluuya, who had never been in like a big budget movie, and Allison Williams, like, oh, from Girls and NBC's production of Peter Pan. Cool.
I love that you remember that.
Yeah. How could I forget?
Man. So I will say I like that the increased budget is really put to good use in this film, though. And I think one of the most surprising aspects of this film, and one of my favorite aspects of the film, was how big the scope of its plot was, which is definitely something I was not expecting after seeing the initial trailers.
I think I almost feel the opposite of that. I appreciate how big the scope of it becomes, but I also think that part of the issue is the third act gets a little crazy.
Oh, and that's good, what in good I ways love.
Or good in good ways and bad ways, but I think the first two acts are just really good, tight horror that is the kind of like, oh, you're in this like a little secluded area and you just cannot escape. That's my kind of horror when it gets into like this big kind of like headier stuff. Like, oh, okay, this is a little weird.
Man, that's what I love though. I feel like it's like it lulls you in to its social commentary.
Yeah, definitely like just sneaks it on in, and there's a few curveballs, but I think focusing on like the writing of it, how succinct, like the humor is there, which I love. First of all, it's funnier than Get Out. It's scarier than Get Out.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's better than Get Out.
I liked it more than Get Out. I'll just put it out there. I liked it more than Get Out.
Okay. I'm not sure. This has been a very interesting movie to think about right now.
I feel after seeing it. Okay, so I feel like that whole idea of like it sticking with you and like having to process it a little bit more than Get Out is one of the reasons that I like it so much more than Get Out. Whereas like Get Out, I love Get Out. I thought it was great. I thought it was very clever, very well made, and also like it was very clear in the commentary that it was making. But I don't think that there was a whole lot above the like below the surface of that film.
It was very self-contained.
It was very self-contained, but also just like its message and its like, I want to say metaphors, but there weren't even really any metaphors in the film. Like it was very clear cut. Like this is what's on the table. This is like the message I'm trying to get across to the audience. Yeah. And like, it's cool that it was communicated very effectively, but I guess it's just my personal preference that I like watching a movie with ambiguity and with like various lenses that you could look at it through that sticks with you after you leave the theater, which is something I really didn't get a whole lot of from Get Out.
Right. I think we would argue about ambiguity versus convolution.
Yeah, let's have that discussion.
No, yeah, I'm just saying I think that would be we'll have a spoiler section at the end, but
yeah,
for now, part of the things that worked besides, you know, the acting, it's great, the use of the environment, especially the Santa Cruz boardwalk from like the very first scene where you're on the boardwalk and it's night and it starts raining and it's just like her in the ocean. It's creepy on its own. The way I kind of felt the same way about Get Out that it had like, look, you know, making this forested little mansion, seem very foreboding. Just kind of like the way that it's shot. And I think that it was similar in this movie with how it treated like the lake houses and the beach and just making all of this stuff seem more terrifying than maybe, you know, you would imagine. Cause there is something kind of scary about the water at night. Like what's going on in there?
Man, I don't know. I think the water at night's super peaceful. But yeah, I think that there is
not when you're being murdered on it.
Yeah, exactly. But I do think there is an aspect to that of like what's underneath the surface. And you know, when it comes to this film, one of the main questions is like, what is literally happening beneath the surface of America's crust? And like you see that from the opening intro with slight spoilers for the film, but this is literally the first thing you see when you enter the theater, is like the text crawl of there are thousands of miles of like tunnels underneath America, and most of it is not, it like doesn't even have a purpose. It just exists for one reason or another.
No known purpose.
No known purpose.
And I have not fact checked that, but I think it's plausible,
probably,
right?
Probably true. I would believe it. Like, I think that I'm sure a lot of it is probably just like unfinished construction.
Oh, yeah. Like subways that like never turned into anything.
Yeah. So like, I definitely believe it. I'm sure there was a ton of like infrastructure. Like, I feel like a lot of it probably came from the mid-century infrastructure rebuild that was happening in America, where a lot of contracts just kind of ran out. So these construction companies were just like, well, fuck it. Like, we dug your hole, but like, we're not going to put anything in it now. So,
right. Yeah. You're supposed to provide the actual stuff.
Yeah. But yeah. I do believe that there's a shit ton of unused, underground infrastructure in America.
Yes, definitely. And I think, moving kind of back to the movie is that the pacing of it, like starring, like going from location to location, really like there's only like a few separate sequences in this movie. Like it's maybe like 12 different sequences.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it only like it moves along very quickly, especially the way that it like really sets everything up and makes you feel uneasy without like being those dumb, teen horror movies where they have like, oh, I'm getting all my stuff ready. It's like jump scare. It's, oh no, it's just the friend who's got the beers.
Yeah.
I hate that stuff. Like, it really lulls you into it in an uneasy feeling to begin, and then kind of resets like, oh, okay, everything's fine. But also starts building in the unease later. And you know that like, all right, I know the association with this place is bad. So you're feeling like the fear too. You know that like, I know when they get to the boardwalk, that's when everything's going to start.
Yeah.
Once they get to the beach. It does very mildly. It starts very mildly and then really kicks up into energy. And I think the way that we don't really understand what's going on,
mm-hmm,
helps the direction of it be like, oh, this is much scarier because I don't know what these doppelgangers want. Because they're, yeah, not just trying to like straight up murder them, or else, like, you know, they have like a confrontation early on. Kind of like, what is going on here? Like, what is this? Is not like a slasher movie or anything.
Yeah. And I think that the escalation in this film works very well, because like you said, it start like there's some pretty subtle things. Like, there are obviously some things that are off about every setting that they visit from the get go. But as like you get closer and closer to the confrontation with the doppelgangers, you just have these like subtle coincidences happening in the background throughout the entire film. And I thought that was a really cool way to like build tension towards and just build like a sense of unease around, yeah, what's about to happen. And I do think that throughout the film, it almost feels a little bit like, it almost feels a little Lovecraftian, like with its nightmare logic of like in a real world, or like even this is kind of a knock on the film, like even in America where these doppelgangers are showing up, any family that has like guns, I don't think would really have a problem with like this home invasion type situation.
Oh yeah, no, definitely not. And you have to assume that like out in the middle of wherever they are, like it seems to be like a little bit more of a rural area.
Yeah. But
you know, and it's like, it's California still, right? Like,
people have guns in California, but like there, right, are rural areas, exactly, in California. But I do think that like, so in the film, you know, they encounter the doppelgangers and they initially try to call the cops and they're like, oh, hey, our cops are like 14 minutes away or whatever. And I'm just like, as the film progresses, it kind of starts to make sense as to like, oh, so that's why the cops were so far away. Like, it's not a case of like the cell phone isn't working or like they're just out that far away from society that the cops are 15 minutes away.
Yeah. It's
something is happening on a global scale that is terrifying. And I think that's, again, why I was going back to the scope of this movie, like why I enjoyed it so much is like, it feels more epic and it feels more terrifying because it's not just an isolated incident.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I understand what you're saying. And I think that, one of the good parts about it is it uses the doppelgangers and they kind of like perfectly go against these very normal family. Like Duke Winston, it plays the father who is very much a dad.
Yeah. And a very different character than his role in Black Panther.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. He, did you see, like, it seemed like he was basing his character on like Jordan Peele,
right?
Like, yeah. He seemed very much like, is this guy just doing Jordan Peele? Like,
I hope that we get to see him in more comedies because, man, he was great in this film. And like, he was like the heart of the movie, I feel like. And like, his comedic timing was on point the entire film.
Very, very good dad level.
Yeah. But he also played like, he's also just like an intimidating dude, obviously.
Yeah. He's a big guy.
So his, like, him playing his doppelganger also worked very well. Like, when he's playing the father figure, he's someone that I would totally want to hang out with. He just seems like a cool guy to like grab a drink with. But holy fuck, I would be terrified if his doppelganger came in and just started hunting me. Like, goddamn.
Oh, yeah, because you're like, this guy's going to kill me.
Yes. Just
easily, with his bare hands.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think the kids do really well, too. They're kids, you know? They're usually kids in movies are bad.
Yeah, these kids were pretty good. They're pretty good. They're believable as children. They're also terrifying as their doppelgangers. And like, I think that's true for every character in this film. Like, they work well as their human character and their doppelganger.
Yeah, that's like hard to do. And let's also talk about
Tim Heidecker. Elizabeth.
Yeah.
I mean, Tim, if you Heidecker want to talk about Elizabeth Moss real quick, we can talk about Elizabeth Moss first.
Yeah, I mean, they're both really good. Like, Elizabeth Moss, obviously a great actress, like, yeah, dramatic actress. But Tim Heidecker really brings this kind of like douchebag, like yuppie character, and plays it real hard.
I honestly feel like, okay, slight digression, but have you ever seen his film called The Comedy?
I don't think I have.
So the comedy is like a weird, super dry dramedy style film that is all about Tim Heidecker's character, who inherits wealth from his father dying, and he is just like this lazy millennial who has all this money, doesn't have to work, and is just coasting through life, like fucking with people because it's the only thing that brings him any sense of excitement. And he plays that character so well, and I feel like Jordan Peele watched that movie and was like, I want this guy. I want this guy in Us. Like, this is the character I want in this role.
That's really interesting, because that is such like a type that I would be like, why Tim Heidecker? Like, right? Like, obviously Elizabeth Moss, because she can kind of play whatever.
Yeah.
Like, she's a good actress, but like Tim Heidecker, I feel like you got to write a role for like Tim Heidecker.
Yeah.
And it just really worked out super well.
I wonder if they're friends outside of the film. Like, I wonder if Tim Heidecker and Jordan Peele ever just hang out. If they're just part of that comedy circle.
I bet they have similar. I bet they like similar things.
Yeah, I hope so. I just love the idea of like Tim Heidecker and Jordan Peele going out for drinks at night.
Yeah,
I would love to be a fly on that wall. But also, Tim Heidecker, aside from his human douchebag character, like when you see his their doppelganger show up, like,
oh, major spoiler.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought they showed that in the trailer.
Nope.
Well, they don't show a stop. Well, they show like, okay, sorry.
Rob, you've ruined this movie for everybody.
I know. I'm sorry. Tim Heidecker has a doppelganger in this movie. I just wanted to say that he's also very good in that role. And I would say it's even better than his human character.
Sure.
I had a goddamn blast watching him play his doppelganger.
Yeah, he was being real goofy, real funny. We'll put a spoiler alert in the comments.
Yeah, for sure.
In the description.
I'd definitely do that.
Yeah. Well, now do we want to get into spoilers? How do we want to talk about it? Because I feel like we've gone through most of the movie. I really enjoyed it. I think I would recommend seeing it in a full theater. That's like kind of my stance on it.
Yeah, I would also recommend.
It's a cultural experience.
Yeah, seeing a full theater, like the crowd experience is fun. You know, you'll laugh when it's funny. You'll gasp when it's scary. And I think it'll just be fun to walk out of the theater hearing everybody's interpretation of the film.
Yeah, it's a good movie to see with people and then talk about it afterwards and be like, wait, what happened? No, this. And it was like this. I swear. Like, yeah,
this means this. That means that.
Yeah, there's a lot of meaning and a lot of ambiguity. It's a nice movie. It's more high minded, definitely, than Get Out.
Yeah.
But it delivers also more on the scares and the comedy, too. Like, I thought it was funnier than Get Out. Did you?
Yeah, I think it is funnier than Get Out. And I think, again, it just adds to the cinematic experience. Like, as a whole, I think this film is a more entertaining Get Out is more entertaining than Get Out. But it feels weird. Like, I know we're only comparing it to Get Out because it's Jordan Peele's only other film, but this movie, I really want to like highlight, is not about race, which is something that I don't think a lot of people were expecting. Like, I think everybody just because of Jordan Peele's debut film, and because of the fact that there is a black family in the leading role, a lot of people, I think, are assuming that this film is about race in America, which it is not.
Right. It's definitely got a social commentary aspect to it, but it's a little bit deeper under the surface.
Yeah. I also really like, I just love that Jordan Peele did this, though, and that his reasoning behind it is like, he's just trying to normalize black actors in every role. Like, not every black actor in a leading role should have to be in a movie about race.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think he's getting that message across.
Yeah, I think I think this is like a good, you know, 1-2 punch for his first two directorial debuts.
Yeah, I mean, goddamn.
Yeah, very. I mean, I think that he's really set himself up to be. Do you think he's going to stay in horror? I think, is that what he's decided?
I think he'll branch out. I think that it's going to be a slow progression outside of horror. And what I'm really hoping is that he's kind of like, I hope that it's like an M. Night Shyamalan style progression, except that his films stay good.
Right. Yeah. He's definitely on that pathway of like one really good movie and then one like movie that's a little bit more divisive, but everyone still pretty likes.
Yeah. So I am very curious to see where he goes. And I know he's got the Twilight Zone reboot coming out on CBS All Access, which I'm also very excited for.
Oh boy, CBS All Access. Great.
Yeah, get ready to subscribe to another video on demand service.
Nope.
I am definitely subscribing for that because it's also an excuse to watch the new Star Trek series.
Right, they're going to have another new Star Trek series too. Like, they're going to have another Picard one.
Oh, fuck yeah. Gibby.
Should be wild.
Oh, all right. But I think this movie, Us, has gotten some pretty high recommendations from both Dan and I.
See it in theaters.
Yeah, see it in theaters. See it as soon as possible. It deserves your money.
It's not that scary.
Sure. And
if that's what's keeping people from seeing it, I'm like, it's not that scary.
It's not that scary. I think it's definitely more violent than Get Out. And I know there were people that I was seeing Get Out with who were scared because like they were like, oh, Get Out is going to be too scary for me. Like, Get Out is not a horror film. Get Out's like a thriller at best.
Yeah.
I think you could probably categorize this a little closer to horror.
Yeah, I think this is definitely like a more traditional horror movie.
Yeah, but again, it's not really a slasher film. I guess it's a little more psychological horror. But yeah, there's definitely more violence and there are more disturbing images in this film than Get Out. Yeah. But yeah, high recommendations across the board. Go see it. And then come back and listen to the rest of this episode because we're about to jump into spoiler territory.
We are going to enter the spoiler zone. Turn it off. Pause it. You have a 3, 2, 1. You've entered the spoiler zone.
Welcome.
This movie doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Because it's nightmare logic.
Change my mind.
This movie. So, okay. This movie is all like it's all metaphorical, right? Like, obviously, if you follow the logic and the more you think about like, oh, the government was making these clones to try to control the people above them. Like, yeah, that doesn't make any sense. But if you follow the nightmare dream logic of the film.
Right, yeah. When you say it like that, when you say it out loud, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. No. And also, I love all the people that are like, well, where did they get their clothes? Like, where did they get all those scissors? I was like, who gives a shit? Like, you're the type of film fan that is wondering where the fucking living room at the end of 2001 A Space Odyssey came from. Like,
because that movie clearly defined that you were going to some kind of different dimension and that things were going to be weird. This movie sets up some rules for itself that it does not. It sets itself in the regular world. And then it's got this secret like under society, and the way that it describes it doesn't make any sense. So you're telling me that these people, like, they're linked, they have to like do everything that they do, like they have to completely, they're linked, tethered, if you will, to their upstairs people.
Yes.
But even when they go down, then if they switch places, obviously, then they still, the down person has to do
No, it's the people. It's the people on top. It's the people on the surface world that control the people below.
Right. So how, why would the government make people, because they're not being controlled then, right?
They initially wanted to try. They said they wanted to try it, but it failed. It's a failed experiment.
It is. But they don't have souls. Dan, right?
The movie that Jordan Peele did before this was about brain swapping.
Right. And they're like, hey, this is what we're going to do. We're going to swap your brain. It's going to work. And like, all right, yeah, sure. Why not? It doesn't
what do you
make
mean, all right, sure. Why not? Like, I am so willing to give this movie the same amount of thought that I gave Get Out, because Get Out is not actually about the specifics of neurological transplants. It's about the metaphor of a white person wanting to be a black person.
Sure. But they explain it pretty clearly of what are we going to do? We're going to take your spirit, your body, and put it in a different thing. In this scenario.
Yeah, they're like the people on top. Like everybody has a shadow, as they call them in the movies, or a right. tethered, if you want to use like the whatever the official term that they call themselves. It's the same. Like it, to me, it's the same logic. Like, yes, it doesn't make sense in the real world, but because this movie is operating on nightmare movie logic.
No, it doesn't even make sense in the context of the movie.
How does it not make sense within the context of the movie, though?
Like, it makes sense in the context of for Get Out. It's like, oh, wow, these people are acting weird. Like, what's this about? Like, oh, they're taking like the brains of these white people who are decrepit and they're putting them in new bodies. Like, oh, no, that's insane. But they've clearly described the mechanism by which why they're capturing these black people, why all the old black people like seemingly are acting weird, and what they're going to do to Daniel Kaluuya. It's like all of this is happening because of these reasons. And this are like the government made clones and like, all right, cool. It's like, but the clones aren't like people. They don't have souls. And you're like, okay, what does that entail? And it's like, well, don't worry about it. Cause they can still be controlled, I guess. And then, you have then this girl who is brought back from the surface. She is brought down and she is being controlled by the new person who is up top.
Yeah, by the person who took her place.
Right.
Yes.
So how did she get out of her handcuffs and how did she convince everybody else who'd have no souls and can't like process anything besides like doing exactly what the people on top are doing?
She probably broke her hand to get out of her cuffs. I don't know. Maybe one of the other tetherds came and uncuffed her. Maybe she didn't put the cuffs on.
How could the tetherds do that if they have to do what the people on the surface do?
She broke her hand. I don't know.
What do you mean she broke her hand?
She broke her hand to get out of the cuffs. People do it all the time.
But she's being controlled by the person on top.
Not all the time. The people on top.
What do you mean all the time?
Not everybody at the surface is eating rabbit all the time, and yet the people down there are still eating rabbit.
Exactly. You see what I'm saying?
I'm saying it's not that important.
How is it
like,
not
if
that
what
important?
You're getting from the movie is the logistics of the government experiment that is...
Not even the logistics.
It's the logistics of the government experiment and how like this world works, of how the people up top are controlling the people below. Like, okay, I get it. If you want movies to clearly explain what the rules are for like a metaphor,
no, but
you
they
can
do
dislike
explain
this
it.
Movie.
That's my issue. My issue is that they pretend like they explain it. They have, if you're going to have a huge exposition dump in the third act of your movie, fucking explain something and not just like make it way weirder.
And I feel
confusing.
Like they explain enough to make the metaphor make sense. And I think it adds layers to the whole idea of like, oh, clearly the people on the surface are controlling the people down below. Like, I feel like that's a pretty blatant metaphor for the people in power controlling the people that are disenfranchised.
Yes. No, it's a pretty clear metaphor that I'm still confused on. How it works within the plot of the movie. You know what I mean? Because then they come up like, so she breaks out of the spell, I guess.
Yeah.
Which it's a spell for sure. Why not?
It's a revolution.
Sure. Yeah. And then she's like, all right, let's all rise up. And it's like, well, OK, so you're the leader then.
But yeah, she is. She's the only tethered that can talk. Because she's not really a tethered. She's, you know, a former human.
Right. So it's her ability to speak that makes her the most powerful.
Yeah. And I feel like that's kind of powerful. It's like it shows you the power of a voice, like a single voice that's able to inspire an uprising.
Okay. Okay. So you're going like very broad stroke metaphor.
Yes.
In this.
Yes. This it's a metaphor painted in very broad strokes because the scope of this is not just about, you know, the entire story is not just about one dude who gets captured by some white people that want to take his body, that want to put an old white dude's brain into his body.
Right. Yeah. No, I agree that the scope is different in that respect of that one is smaller and one is bigger. But my point is that I think if you're going to have a bigger scope, you got to have bigger support structures within your script and your plot to justify how big. Like if you're going to have a story about like one battle of World War II, you don't need to do as much legwork than if you're making a movie about all of World War II. Like if you're going to make a movie about all of, you know, Pearl Harbor versus like The Longest Day. Like there is a little, there's not even really a good explanation in that scenario. But, you know, it's like the difference between like a biopic and then a movie about like that area of.
OK, yeah, sure. My argument is that this at its core, this movie is still about it's about this family dealing with this nightmare. It's about a single family dealing with their doppelgangers. But the implications are that this is a worldwide phenomenon, not well, maybe not worldwide, but at least United, like nationwide phenomenon.
It's America. They're Americans.
Yeah, they are Americans. I love that line, too, when they're like, what are you people?
You're Americans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Did you get that her voice was messed up because she had her like
her trachea was like
crushed?
Broken? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was super cool. Oh, I loved it. But
see the continuity of stuff like that, like this movie is almost too good for it to be that like that janky at the end.
I don't know. See, you know what I mean? What at the end, like when the twist is revealed.
Yeah. When it's bringing in like all these implications and I'm like, okay, I've been taking this movie very seriously right up until this moment.
See,
and now okay, you're
see, I don't know. That's the thing is like, so like we were saying earlier, this movie is a lot funnier than Get Out. And I think this movie takes itself way less seriously than Get Out does.
I think the characters are funnier because we get more time to spend with them just being normal with like a family. And we see that's more relatable of like, I've never been in an interracial relationship, but I've had a dad who's made like dumb jokes and, you know, like a sibling who's like been like, you know, annoying or whatever. So I think that there's more room for that kind of sympathy.
Well, yeah, there's that. But also, I just feel like, so even as the shit starts going down and they start realizing like, oh, the world is fucked. Like, this is like an apocalyptic event, which is also like foreshadowed by the whole biblical reference in the beginning, like the Jeremiah 11:11 thing.
Yeah.
But it's like, even after they realize the direness of the situation, they're still just making quips. Like, it's not that serious of a film. They're not having, like, they're not going through psychological trauma. And they're not like, oh, fuck, life as we know it
they
is over.
They definitely
like,
are.
No, because they're still making jokes. They're still laughing about everything. And, like, it's still just a good time at the movies. And, like, I don't think that this movie, I think Get Out took itself way more seriously than this film does. And I think that works to its benefit because I guarantee you Jordan Peele knows how ridiculous the premise of this film is. But his point, like the point of this film isn't for him to explain like the realistic aspects of the government making a underground project to try to control
the people.
I don't
need it to be realistic. I just need it to make sense within the rules that the movie has set out. And I don't think it does that. That's why.
I think it makes sense within the rules that the movie sets out because I don't think it really sets out that many rules.
Sure. It doesn't set out that many rules, but it breaks every single one of them.
I don't even think it breaks them.
I think we're just going to fundamentally disagree on like how, like I get what you're, I see where you're coming from and I just like fundamentally disagree and that it like the more that I think about it, the more that I thought about Get Out, the more I liked it. The more I think about this, I'm like, that doesn't make any fucking sense. Like,
see, I don't know. The more I think about this, the more I like it. The more I think about Get Out, the more I'm just like, oh, yeah, I got it. Like, I got it on the first viewing. That's cool.
Why like, the hands across America?
Why the hands? Yeah. Because Hands Across America, one, as I'm sure you probably know already, was a real event that was a massive failure. So you could draw an allegory between the massive failure of Hands Across America and the massive failure of the government.
People didn't literally hold hands across America.
And you can draw an allegory between the failure of government experiment in Get Out to try to control the population by making doppelgangers and the failure yeah. to try to draw attention to the disenfranchised with the Hands Across America publicity sure. event. But
they're
I also
like,
think
they're
that
like Converse, yeah.
it clearly ties into like the themes of drawing attention to the disenfranchised in this country, because that, I mean, that's what Hands Across America was all about. It's like, right. oh, like we shouldn't forget about the poor people in America, the starving people in America. Like these are problems that everybody just ignores all the time because it's inconvenient to them to think about this type of stuff. So let's make this big nationwide event that is going to like call it like that is absolutely going to call the attention of everybody in the country. Even though it failed and everybody forgot about it, like, you know, a couple of weeks after it happened. So I think that like it was a good incorporation of an actual event in American history. And the fact that, you know, they actually pull it off with the disenfranchised rising up and doing it themselves. I think that's pretty cool. I think that works. And also just go ahead.
Here's my version of this movie that makes sense. If Jordan Peele brought this to me and was like, hey, get any notes for this? I'd be like, yeah, a few big ones. When she goes down the rabbit hole, LOL.
Yeah.
And she sees her doppelganger. Don't make it worldwide. Don't make it like countrywide. Keep it to just this family. And
no
then way. when they go down, have it be everyone is like still tethered. Get that tether so that she's walking down and like, wait, what's going on? Like, oh, they're going on doing this stuff. And she's like, what? And then she finally finds her version. And they do like the whole like don't explain anything about like the government clones or whatever. Just go right into like. You know what it was like her from her perspective. Laying the seeds for when we call back to it and we realize that, oh, it was the switch was at the beginning the whole time. So that we still have this mystery of like, what's going on here? And we can fill in our own like minds about this instead of like, because I like it better if I have to imagine like, wait, what is going on? They never explained that instead of, yeah, they explained that and it didn't make any goddamn sense.
I don't know. I kind of I don't really mind the exposition dump because again, I don't think it's really detailed enough to pick apart. I think it's a pretty vague.
it is just detailed enough to
no,
pick apart.
No, it's a vague. It's literally the government tried to control the people above us and they failed. So they abandoned us. And now we're all just living underneath like the wealthy and the privileged. And I feel like that's also a pretty clear metaphor to the like all these stories of, you know, the government flooding the streets of inner cities with drugs and also, in effect, creating more disenfranchised people that they then abandoned. Because as we all know, America doesn't have a support system. America has no safety nets. So that's how I view that.
Yeah. All right. I don't think we're going to agree on it.
No.
But I definitely get what you're saying, and I appreciate, and I can identify with these broad strokes, and I think that's like there's good in there. I think that the way that it was delivered to me was janky, and makes me question what's going on. I think it really keeps me from really, really enjoying this movie. This is what keeps it from enjoying it as much as Get Out, which I think in every other aspect, I think it's probably better. I mean, I'm just like, what? This is what's going on? Wait, what?
Yeah, I mean, I get it. But again, I view Get Out as being like, I think the premise of Get Out is just as ridiculous as this film. So that's, you know, that's just me.
I think the premise is ridiculous. but I think that they give me enough explanation where I'm like, yeah, sure, this makes sense. Yeah, I get it. Like, in the confines of this, of this,
and I'm telling
weird
you, I feel the same way about Us. Like, this doesn't make sense in the real world, but I get it. Like, but within the logic of this world, I get it. Like,
right? Yeah, sure. They souls, whatever.
Yeah, this is a stupid nightmare world where souls apparently exist that the U.S. government is not able to recreate. And it's a world where coincidences, like these coincidences that happen, also have no explanation, which I think lends more of an air of eeriness to the entire situation, and like makes it feel more like, again, a nightmare where human logic just doesn't make sense. So I'm okay with it. I think it works better as a storytelling mechanic. Like, I don't know. I guess I'm not that much of a stickler on logic in a film.
Yeah. I mean, I like, there's certain like suspension of disbelief, but then when you are suspending disbelief, like, I feel like the first suspension of disbelief is me being like, oh wow, this world has like doppelgangers. That's messed up. And then they're like, hey, don't worry, you don't need to suspend your disbelief anymore. Here's an explanation for it. And I'm like, nah, man, I was good. Like, no, why didn't you do that?
Like, it's like you have to suspend your disbelief even more, because it's like, oh, so this is a world where the government was able to create these nightmare creatures.
Right, I guess I was just an hour and a half into the movie, and like, I had already suspended my disbelief, and they're like, nah, wait, we got another big one for you.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I do think this movie would have benefited more if they just didn't explain anything at all.
Yeah, I agree 100%
like
with that.
If she just met, like, if they just left it up to audience interpretation to see, like, these underground tunnels and these empty classrooms with, what's her name, Red. I think the doppelganger's name is Red. Like, they just had that encounter.
No, her name is Adelaide.
The main character's name is Adelaide, and then her doppelganger's name is Red. Also,
The doppelganger's
name
is
Adelaide.
We don't know the main character's name.
Okay, so how do you feel about that twist?
I felt stupid for not seeing it coming.
Yeah, you didn't see it coming?
I think I probably like did at the very beginning, but it's one of those things where I think a movie is good when it'll lay the pieces for you, and you're kind of like, all right, I see how this is. And then it makes you forget about him, and then brings it back, and you're like, oh, wait, I'm an idiot. Like,
yeah, I mean, I feel like this movie did a decent job at that. Although I will say, one, you're a fucking idiot. I think I kind of assumed that a twist like that would happen. Just even after seeing the first trailer for this film about doppelgangers, being like, oh, so one of them, like, I didn't know if it was going to be the main character, if it was going to be one of her kids or something, but like, somebody's swapping places with their doppelganger, and it's not going to be revealed until the end of the movie that they're a doppelganger.
I kind of had that feeling. I didn't know from the very like first scene or whatever that like, oh, this is obvious, that even though they really like laid it out. Like,
yeah, that's the thing, is as soon as I saw the whole thing, like as soon as there was that scene in the counselor's office where they're like, I just want my, like, where the mom is like, I just want my daughter back. Like, she hasn't talked in like, you know, she hasn't talked since the incident. I was like, oh, something fucky is happening right now. So it was like, oh, okay, I get it. Like, I think it laid the pieces well enough. Like, it wasn't just a twist out of left field. Like, it was clearly foreshadowing the swap.
And that, yeah. And when you go back and you think like, oh, wait, yeah, she can't keep the rhythm with her snapping.
Yeah.
She eats like rabbit food. Like, she eats like, you know, strawberries,
like the strawberries from the side. I'm like, that's fucked up.
Yeah. She's like, what did she say? Like, oh, I'm not good at talking.
Yeah. But like, I do really like, the idea of, I think that the twist works super well thematically, because the idea of like somebody who came from that position of disenfranchisement,
100%,
stealing like, you know, a position of power, like some modicum of privilege in life.
The only thing that was different was how they were raised, whatever.
Yeah. And like, she suddenly knows like how, like, that's why she's fighting so hard to keep her place, and why she like,
I don't want to go back there because she's going to come back and kick my ass.
That terror that she had throughout the entire film. It's like, ooh, this makes so much more sense. And I feel like it's so much heavier watching her, like, on a second viewing. It's so much heavier to see like, oh, like these, all of her actions are actually from more of a selfish point of view, because she knows that she doesn't want to go back to where she came from.
Yeah. Have you seen it twice?
Yeah.
I think it would be interesting to see, maybe that's why you feel a little bit more gung-ho on it. Like, a second viewing would be like, oh, wow, okay, I get this more.
No, I will say, when I first walked out of the theater, I was having very mixed thoughts about this film. And I was very much in the same perspective of like, does this make sense? Like, does that make sense? Does this entire fucking movie make sense? But then I watched it again and I think I was just kind of more accepting of like, this is what this movie wants to be. Like, this is its message. This is its thesis. And I think it gets it across very well, regardless of the detail of like the actual, like the literal plot of the film.
The government.
Yeah.
The government created us to control those above. Like, how do you know that?
Yeah.
Who told you?
Yeah.
Is there a guy with pamphlets like coming around like, all right, this is why you're here, you dumb fuckers.
I saw the syllabus one day.
They left the blueprints around.
Yeah.
Goddamn. Show me all the blueprints.
Oh, can we just talk about Tim Heidecker's doppelganger, though, now that we're in full spoiler territory?
Yeah, it's so good. What a dick.
That
yeah.
scene hilarious. When he's like, when he kills... You know, when he kills his tethered and then he like Elizabeth Moth is like she's dying and reaching up to her husband's doppelganger for help. And he like reaches down to her and then just does the hand like wipe. He just like reaches his hand back yeah, and like, wipes ooh. His head like, gotcha. And I'm like, and I saw somebody on Twitter point it out, which is hilarious to me, that because doppelgangers just spend their entire lives like mirroring the actions and personalities of their tethered, the reason that Tim Heidecker's character is acting drunk the entire time is because he spent like yeah. two-thirds of his life just drunk as fuck.
Just being an alcoholic.
Yeah.
God, yeah. That movie is, yeah, it's more fucked up when you, yeah.
Oh,
when
man.
You think about the implications of the main characters.
Yeah. Oh, man, that scene, though, in Tim Heidecker's house when, like, he's like, hey, there's somebody in our driveway. Or, like, Elizabeth Moss is saying, like, I think there's something out there. And then he just turns around and, like, their daughter's on the balcony and the fucking doppelganger just comes out of nowhere and, like, stabs her in the throat. I was like, oh, shit, that's way more
my
intense than I was expecting.
Goddamn mind. Yeah. Yeah. It was like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, that was so sudden, so violent.
Yeah, and I love the executions from outside the house. Like, oh yeah,
yeah.
That's, I love that distant murder where it's like no one's gonna fucking hear you, dude.
Right? God, yeah. This I love this movie. I'm pretty safe. I feel like I'm pretty safe in saying that I like this movie significantly more than Get Out.
There's definitely a lot more to unpack. I feel like.
Mm-hmm. That's why I like All it. Right. Just like Batman versus Superman.
Shut the fuck up, God. Release the Snyder cut of us,
please.
Please, Lord, please. All right. So I think we've gone through pretty much everything. If you're still listening to us, do you have any final thoughts on your crazy ideas?
Pretty hyped to watch it again to see if there's anything else that I catch. And again, I think that there are multiple lenses to view this movie through. Like, I'm not saying that the way that I interpreted it is the right one. And I think that's what makes it so cool is that I look forward to seeing the 12 different video essays on YouTube about what us actually means.
Yeah, no, I think you're pretty on the money. I think that's, I can't see like another interpretation of like the broad strokes of what the theme is.
Mm.
So we'll see. We'll see. We'll all see.
Yeah.
For us too. We.
USS. It slowly morphs into USSR.
That's what I'm waiting for, that crazy us extended universe.
Yeah, you get that clever reference in the title, or the double entendre in the title of us, that it's also just
us and US.
US, yeah.
USA, USA.
Goddamn.
We're Americans. Yeah, fuck that voice. God, that's so fucking scary. That's
this movie, so good.
She was, those other kids weren't that scary, but she was terrifying.
Oh, yeah. I'd let her give me nightmares forever.
Yeah, was it like Abraham? Like, this is Abraham. He just cries like a bitch.
Pretty much. And then he just goes, he's just, ooh, ooh.
Yeah, that, oh man, and him getting like disemboweled. Like,
yeah, by the fucking boat motor. Oh boy.
Yeah.
Oh man, I love the joke about the kill counts though. And again, this movie, like, that's why I'm like, this movie does not take itself seriously. Like, they're like, they just watched like their family friends get murdered and they're making jokes about how many like doppelgangers they've killed. Like, this,
but
this
they
is
didn't
like this is
like
only Evil
Winston
Dead levels.
Duke liked him. Yeah,
this is like Evil Dead levels of horror comedy.
Of all comedy all day.
Yeah. Yeah,
I agree. All right, well, we both liked it. Go see it.
Yeah,
I'm a little bit iffy. Just tweet at me if you want to talk about it, and I'll tweet all the spoilers at all your friends. Yeah, cool. All right, well, I've been Dan. You know how to follow me at the Dan Leo Show, Letterboxd, D Leo. The website is viewingangles.com and follow us on Twitter at viewingangles, where we're going to own all the libs. Hashtag something, whatever. I don't care.
Yeah, you got it.
Rob, how do the people get in touch with you?
Follow me on Twitter and Instagram and Letterboxd at Robert Jr. Jr.
Love syncing up. What movie are we going to see next week? I think there's only two options.
What are the options? Give me them.
Dumbo and Beach Bum.
Oh, fuck. I guess we have to see Dumbo.
Yeah, the new Tim Burton movie featuring a flying elephant. I've heard very mixed things.
It literally has a 51% on Rotten Tomato right now. So extremely mixed things.
Oh, man, that is so divisive.
Yeah. But I mean, hey, I'll see it just for the cast, like just to see Michael Keaton and Danny DeVito on screen together again.
Yeah, just to see Danny DeVito in a little outfit.
Yeah, in a little serviceman's outfit. Danny DeVito in a top hat, you got me.
Yeah, sign me up. This will complete the circus trilogy for Tim Burton and Danny DeVito.
Wait, will it?
Yeah, hasn't he played? Because wasn't he a circus guy in a what you call it, in Big Fish? And wasn't he another circus guy in?
Oh fuck.
What's the other Tim Burton movie where Danny DeVito's in it?
Batman Returns.
I think there's one more. I'm not sure. It could be referring to that because he's got the umbrella and he's like basically a clown.
Yeah, but I don't think he was a circus entertainer in that, though. But
right, but he was a freak.
Yes. Has Tim Burton done another circus film?
You know, that's a good question.
Well, hey, that means we got another film to look forward to for Tim Burton and Danny DeVito to finish their circus trilogy.
Yeah, I am with it. All right. We'll catch you next week, nuts. It's never not going to be funny. But until then, you'll be with your thoughts.
Yeah, stay American. Yeah. Bye.